PGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 601, recorded on February 9th,
601st edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 435th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dinser.
I am Scott Durr.
And I am Jonah Fowle.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
Now, before we move on, last week we were talking about MLB The Show 21 for the Xbox and all that stuff. And apparently I was wrong about something, and I know it's going to depress the hell out of TJ. You're not going to be able to use your old franchise and old Road to the Show saves in the new one. They're not going to transfer over.
I missed the last edition of MLB The Show.
Still not going to move forward, though, so.
So, I'm just saying that won't be too much of an issue for me. I was going to start from scratch.
That's cool. Also, I was watching someone playing Road to the Show 20, and I was very concerned, because this dude had 36 home runs in 52 games and was batting .533. Then I found out, oh, okay, good. You can there's sliders in Road to the Show and all that stuff which you can alter to make it easier or harder for you, sort of like Super Mega Baseball, you know. I found it interesting, Operation Sports. For those who don't know, Operation Sports is probably the best place for console and PC sports discussion. They actually say that you should tick down the line drives lower, because MLB The Show tends to have too many line drives. So, if you want something that's realistic. But, I mean, 20 looks good. It's going to be interesting to see how 21 looks with the next-gen graphics. And that's the one thing that's about, they haven't shown any graphics at all lately. They, both trailers for the regular edition and the Jackie Robinson edition, they just had video talking about Fernando Tatis and Jackie Robinson. They didn't really have any gameplay.
Yeah.
I'm a little disappointed that they're doing the entire thing that you do, like 2K does. You know, if you want to get something that there's no smart forward. You have to, if you want both versions of it, you have to pay for the slightly more expensive version than in order to get both the 8th generation and 9th generation consoles versions of it, which is disappointing, but that's the way it is. At least if you get the special Jackie Robinson edition, you get both. And if you get the physical Jackie Robinson edition, you get an MLB The Show cap.
Mm-hmm.
A physical cap that you can wear as a baseball cap. So, yeah. But like I said, I'm waiting for graphics. They haven't announced a Switch version, and I don't know if they're ever going to announce it, because it's going to require storage like nothing else. What's odd is they haven't announced a PC version, and I'm wondering if it's because they're going to wait like 6 months for that version, because here's the thing with the PC version. There's not going to be a next-gen version and a current-gen version, because PC is always PC generation.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if it'll be like $60 on Steam.
It'll be interesting to see.
And I just want to get it on PC because it'd be a lot easier for me to stream. I mean, I can stream from the Xbox, but I have so much more control when I'm using OBS.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I completely understand that. I know how to set up streaming on my console, but it's always such a huge pain, like having to drag. And obviously, this is something I can do because I have a laptop, but it's still annoying dragging things around, connecting things, and I don't know. I would rather just be able to stream on PC whenever applicable.
Another bit of information came out about MLB's show. Apparently, in the past couple of months, Microsoft is actually helping Sony San Diego with the game. So for anybody who believes that the Xbox version isn't going to be up to snuff, don't worry, Microsoft was there. helping them out. So.
That's great. This really is like a whole new generation of collaboration for this game.
Well, I mean, you have cross-play. And you have cross-saves, which means if you have both the PS5 and the Xbox, play it on the PS5, and then you can take your saves to the Xbox and take the Xbox saves back to the PS5. Because believe it or not, there's a lot of people who own both consoles.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also cross-play. I think that includes franchise mode, too, online franchise.
That would be delightful if that's true.
Yeah. The only thing is that, you know, they're drip-feeding the more information about the game for the next few weeks. The game, by the way, is officially coming out April 20th. I don't know if we talked about that last week, so it is coming up. And, you know, maybe at some point in the future there will be a Switch version. Who knows how much it'll be stripped down to accommodate the Switch. Or maybe Sony just doesn't want to deal with another Japanese console maker. Because, you know, Sony and Microsoft have been collaborating lately on the cloud, you know, what's called making cloud-based gaming. Sony and Nintendo do not like each other at all.
No. I still think it's going to be in a situation where they do it like cloud streaming, where on the like they did with Control and Hitman for Nintendo Switch, because clearly there is no way that the Nintendo Switch could handle Hitman in all of its entirety without going through that cloud service.
Yeah. I just wonder, you know, if Microsoft at some point convinces Nintendo, hey, you know, xCloud is really good. you should have a streaming console.
That's an interesting question. I don't know what the cloud service Nintendo uses to make Hitman and Control possible is.
Yeah.
I don't know that. I don't think it's Azure, but I also don't know exactly what it is.
Well, we said last week that Nintendo said don't count on any new Switch, Switch 2s. I mean, I still have to think they're going to announce a form factor change, though, you know, because they always do that with their consoles. I mean, you have 3DS, then 3DS XL, then 2DS, you know.
I guess they're spacing it out, I guess, for next year, maybe.
One of the news items this week is, which I didn't include because it's not really news, is that E3 is going to be online again. And now, here's the thing, they have an entire year. So I'm wondering if it'll be a lot more involved. Because remember last year, I think we got a bunch of demos to play during E3? I think they should double down on that and have a lot of playable demos, even if they're just vertical slices for people to get excited about games. You know, you can't be at E3? Well, here's some demos.
Yeah. I don't know what to expect out of E3 this year because I've seen that they're, like, trying to push for this digital thing, but I've also heard some really, like, weird things about the prerequisites to be part of the E3 2021 digital showcase. One of which is apparently a 6K deal, or a six-digit deal, like, in the 100,000s, which at this point with groups like Ubisoft and Nintendo having already found out that they can do this stuff on their own and they don't need E3 to do it, and especially if it's going to be digital anyways.
Here's the thing.
What do they need E3 for?
Well, you know what? They said the same thing like 10 years ago when they did E4All, and that was a disaster. So they do. Here's the thing. If that were true, then why do you have, Gamescom? No, you have to have a big party with everybody coming together and showing the stuff that's coming out. And by the way, the Game Awards don't count. No, here's the thing. I am part of Digital Expo, Pop Expo. Right now, it's Digital Expo. And every year that, you know, you have to have people come and have hands-on this stuff. Just getting press releases and, you know, and all that stuff that's digital doesn't have the same thing as actually having it in your hands, trying it out, you know, doing things, you know. You have to be in there in person, really, to get the full impact. And they have to do what Gamescom Dove have, that one day that's all about the consumer. then have the special section for consumers while the press have their own section for getting down and dirty, you know. And people will pay to be at E3. Just, you know, what's frustrating for them is that a lot of the stuff that goes on at E3 is boring to them, you know. What people at E3 want are two things. One, they want to play games, and two, they want swag. Mm-hmm. So just have a section of E3 just for games and swag, and let the press, you know, do their own show. But I don't know. ESA has never really been particularly smart when it comes to throwing a convention.
And, like, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I just don't... I wonder if the big companies will actually be willing to spend six figures on being a part of this, or if they'll just say, nah.
Well, even if they do what EA does now, and Microsoft has been doing, and Digital Devolver has always done, because they're not allowed at E3, is just to have their own parties, you know, their own sections outside of E3.
I mean, but what I'm saying is that E3 isn't having a physical thing this year. It's doing an all digital event.
Well, what if you had during time of E3, which you had nationwide stuff, like you have EA Play on the East Coast and the West Coast, and you know, somewhere in Texas and somewhere in the North Midwest, you know. Just some kind. You need a showcase that's in the U.S. That's it, you know.
But what I'm saying is that if it's going to be all digital, then what do you need to pay?
No, I don't mean that. I mean, when this is not COVID's not it will their COVID vaccine everybody will have by the end of the year.
Sure, but this is going to be a digital event.
I get that. I'm just saying, when E3 comes back to normal, is what I'm thinking about. Digital is digital. I mean, Nintendo's decided to do their Nintendo show every year for the past decade or so. I don't know. But, like I said, it'll be interesting. And, you know, we're talking about a news item we're not going to be talking about, so who cares? So what have you been playing, TJ?
I've been playing Destruction All-Stars. A lot. I love that game. This was a PS5 launch.
Yeah.
The game is
came out last week. So
the game is essentially a demolition derby with a huge, almost like pro wrestling level performative twist to it. Like it's the amount of over the top presentation in the game and how beautiful the characters look and the animations. It's just phenomenal. I really love the game show aspect of it. It makes me think of Twisted Metal meets Monday Night Combat.
Hmm. I think you talked about this last week.
I might have. I can't remember.
You did. As a matter of fact, I last week I said that reminded me of a game that's an indie game that's on Xbox, and I now know the name of it. It's called Concept Destruction, in which you have paper cars doing a demolition derby. Cars made of paper. It's for $5. And it's a similar concept. I mean, it's $5 as any game, but, you know, it's cute. It's cute.
Hmm. I've still been playing the heck out of this game. It's so fun. And right now, they did an interesting thing, and they launched it as a free PS Plus game. If you have PS Plus, then you can pick it up as the free game for February. Which, historically speaking, a lot games like this that have gone into PS Plus usually turn out pretty good. I mean, or at least they keep a following for quite some time. Rocket League was one of them.
Okay, so I'm going to have a little bit of gloating now. I seem to remember roughly, I don't know, 6 months ago, in which I said Fall Guys was Ultimate Showdown was a fad, and it was probably going to vanish after a year. Well, it's vanishing. It has all-time low. No one is streaming it anymore, and only a few thousand people are actually playing it now. It peaked, and now it's on its way out. So I'd like to gloat a bit for predicting that.
10,000 players on Steam in the last 24 hours. I wouldn't say it's as big as it was, but
it had a disastrous fall.
I wouldn't say disastrous.
Have you seen? Check the check the bar graph over the past few months, and no one's streaming it. I mean, okay, there is one streamer who occasionally has, I forgot what he calls it, a showdown, something like that, but yeah, it's on its way out, basically. It's becoming irrelevant.
I don't know about that. I think it's just becoming a normal game.
No, here's the thing, is that they've done, the game, there's not much game there. That's the biggest problem.
They keep adding to it with new seasons and stuff.
Yeah, four missions, and recently they had to make sure, here's the problem. They added four missions, and they said, holy crap, our population is going down, so they had to make sure that those four missions were done more in the rotation. And Microsoft knew this with Halo 2 a long time ago. You can have a rotation, but you better have a stable, you know, like, I play a lot of Town of Salem. They have a rotation in Coven, but you'll always have Coven All Any, and you'll always have Coven Ranked, that sort of stuff, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, at the end of the day, the game is still keeping a decent player base around it. There are a lot of games that don't keep, that can't keep 10,000 players playing it constantly.
I want to bet there's going to be a Fall Guys 2 announced at E3.
I doubt it, because they're still announcing seasons for it. They actually
they can announce seasons for it, but you know
they
what? They have to
just put out a season 6 days ago.
That's nice. They're going to announce Fall Guys 2, and make sure that it has tons of content, a lot better things to win, that sort of stuff. Because even now, look, it's not exactly the most feature rich game.
I disagree. I mean, they keep adding to it, and it
you can disagree all you like.
I can, because I have stats to back it up.
I'll have to show you something. What's it called? A video someone did of the state of the game. That reminds me of something else, and now I completely forgot. Anyways,
Destruction All Stars is great, and yeah. I love that game, and the characters in that game are so freaking ridiculous, and it's so good. Like, the one I've been going with a lot is Blue Tiger.
No, wait a minute. The characters, do they all have individual, you know, abilities that are unique?
They do.
Okay.
So, like, you have three different things going on in the game at any given time. You can run around the arena on foot. You can get in like a standard car, like there are buggies and vans and roadsters scattered around the arena. And then once you build up a melee, you can select a hero car. And the hero car is unique to whatever character you're playing and has a special ability based on the character you're playing. The guy that I was just talking about, Blue Tiger, Blue Fang. He's this rock star dude in a tiger mask, which right off the bat makes me think of King from Tekken. And he's got a vehicle with basically a line of saw blades on the front of it that acts like a lawnmower when he activates it. You can just annihilate other cars with it. There's another one character that has like a magnetic car that will, when you run into other cars, it will attract the scrap from their car and make a shield. It's really fun how different each of the characters is and the vehicles they have for them.
You know, there is a game that has been associated with Sony for a very long time, and yet people have always been clamoring for it, and that's Twisted Metal. And I'm wondering if this is their way of doing Twisted Metal without having to do Twisted Metal.
Do they own that IP, or is that just...
I don't know.
I do remember playing that back in the day on PlayStation.
I do know Twisted Metal is the brainchild of one guy. David, I forgot his name. What was his name? But it was a... But yeah, I mean, it was the brainchild of a single guy. I think Sony still owns the license, though.
Okay.
David Jaffe, that's right. It was David Jaffe's thing.
Yeah, I was trying to remember, because, like, what's...
The last game he did was Drawn to Death on the PS4.
Interesting.
I mean, he did Twisted Metal for the PS3, but Twisted Metal skipped the PS4 thing.
I was trying to remember. It's the same guy who
God of War.
God of War for a long time.
No, 1 and 2.
Did he not do 3?
Nope, he didn't do 3.
Oh, so he didn't.
No. So, yeah, I mean, but he did all of the Twisted Metals. He also did Cliffhanger, too. Well, he was a tester on it.
Owns Twisted Metal these days. Sony Computer Entertainment owns Twisted Metal these days. Yep. So, technically, they could. They would just need to find a studio to helm it.
Yeah. I mean, Eat Sleep Play was the last developer to work on Twisted Metal. And that was back in 2012, Twisted Metal Black. So.
Wasn't there a PS4 Twisted Metal that was... It was like a reboot.
It was a remaster of Twisted Metal Black. But yeah, I mean, there have been no new games, new Twisted Metal games since the PS3 era.
That was a pretty twisted game, actually.
Yeah, everybody loves Sweet Tooth.
Yeah,
just keep an eye out, DJ, for Sweet Tooth in that game in the. Destruction All-Stars.
Yeah,
you know he'll be a DLC at some point.
They don't have really a character like Sweet Tooth that yet either, so well, that would be a good niche to fill.
Here's the thing, if they don't have a character like Sweet Tooth in the current roster, that means they may have him ready for a DLC for, you know, when interest starts to wane a little bit, you say, oh, by the way, here's Sweet Tooth!
Maybe. I wouldn't mind it at all. That would be fun.
What have you been playing, Scott?
I've been playing a little bit more of Project Octopath. Got into the Chapter 4 of each character. And I've also been playing some Minecraft and making map art. And I got farther in Fate Tactics. So I've been playing various different games a little bit here and there.
Cool. I haven't been playing that much lately. I mean, I have been getting into other games. I did notice that there's one achievement that I did not have. Oh, yeah. So, I've actually started with Planet Coaster, the console version. And it comes with a very long tutorial. I don't remember this one being in the Steam version of Planet Coaster. And it takes you step by step by step with everything in that game. Using the... gamepad for Planet Coaster is a little bit wonky, but that's to be expected. And it looks really, really good on the Xbox One X, and I think it has been optimized for Xbox Series X. So, yeah. I don't know how much I'm going to be playing it, because I prefer to play on a PC games that are like the Roller Coaster Tycoon. I've also been playing a bit of Ghost of a Tale. Have you heard of that one?
Yes.
I think so. It sounds familiar.
Ghost of a Tale is yet another RPG, and well, it's not an RPG per se. It's where you play a mouse whose wife is stolen. He starts the game with his wife gone, and he's being held by rats. And basically, the entire thing about Ghost of a Tale is that you're a mouse, there are rats, you don't want to get in combat with them. A lot of it is running around and hiding. Running around and hiding, running around and hiding, running around and hiding. Eventually, I know that you can actually get costumes that'll make you look like rats, so you don't have to do that. It's really, really good looking. It's really lush. And I plan to, get into it more when I get a chance.
This game is gorgeous. Yeah. I thought about picking this up several times last year when I was going through indies. I still haven't pulled the trigger on it, but you're enjoying it? Are you having a good time with it?
Yeah, just so long as you get into the mindset that once you're spotted, it's like Alien Isolation for mice. Just find that place to hide. Actually, you know what? I think I nailed the description of Ghost of a Tale right there. It's Alien Isolation except for mice, and there's a lot more aliens.
That little mouse is too cute to be hunted down by xenomorphs.
This is kind of reminding me a little bit of Secret of Nim.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it does have the look of it, except the rats are not friendly. And it's also very nuanced. the further you go into the game, there's sort of like a gray morality going on. You know, it's not like evil versus evil. It's more like authoritarian but well-intentioned versus sneaky, chaotic, good characters. So no one is really in the wrong in terms of society. It's more of about individuals. The reason why I'm playing it is on the PC Game Pass. It's only on PC right now. Speaking of which, I still haven't gotten back to the medium. I will at some point. I mean, it is Silent Hill. So it doesn't even pretend to be anything but Silent Hill.
This is an interesting one because, like, Bloober Team, they didn't really get me with Blair Witch. I wasn't a fan. I didn't really like how Blair Witch played.
Yeah, what about the other game that they're best known for? Fear? Oh,
Layers of Fear. You are pretty good. I like those games. But, like, so that's why I was, like, oddly disappointed in Blair Witch. But Medium has looked really intriguing.
Yeah, for one thing, this is a next-gen game. It is not on the Xbox One X. It is only Xbox Series X and PC. And I'm going to tell you right now, I installed it, and I said, oh, shit, I have to use the solid-state drive because the load screen, the loading is real long if you don't put it on the solid-state drive. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to do it, get it on PC and make sure it's on your solid-state drive. It's gorgeous. I'm still in the opening stages, so it's sort of like in playable tutorial mode. So I don't know how good it is. It's gorgeous.
And oh my God, it's scored.
It is creepy.
Sorry. I just realized it's scored by Akira Yamaoka.
Yeah, who did Silent Hill. There's a reason why they hired him. Yeah. They said they specifically hired him because he did Silent Hill.
Incredible. So is the music good? Have you noticed it at all?
There's a lot of incidental music. They don't have the sweeping music that you hear in Silent Hill yet. Like I said, it's all contextual. And, you know, basically, I'm still in the very early part of the game. It's beautiful. There are already a lot of creepy moments in it. Even when it's heartwarming, it's creepy. And it's one of those, it's like a Silent Hill game in that you're going to have to look at everything. And every time there's an indicator, you better look at it, even if it has nothing to do with anything. And it's sort of like Grim Fandango, if that she's walking and she turns her head to look at something, that means, oh, there's something there, check it out. The writing is good so far. I know it's gotten mixed reviews from people. I don't know why. Not yet, anyway.
I don't know. Let's see what we said about it.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I've just kept on getting distracted from it. So, who knows. But if you like... Ghost of a Tale is also pretty... getting back to Ghost of a Tale. It's also, understandably, very offbeat. You'll meet... I think one of the things I have to do is dress up like a pirate... mouse pirate. Because you have to find all of his equipment for some reason. I don't know why yet. But the game is strongly hinting, yeah, you better collect this. Mm-hmm. It has a lot of RPG tropes, like you have to get, you know, you have clothing that becomes armor. You have, you can do some mild crafting. You have food that you have to eat. That sort of thing. And one of the things, it does not hold your hand. You do not know what food does until you actually eat it. You don't know it's not going to hurt you, but you don't know how nutritious it's going to be until you actually eat it. So you don't know, say, that grain actually gives you more health than cheese until you actually eat either of them. But on the other hand, it's pointless because if you shouldn't worry about your hit points, because if they find you and they hit you, you'll die. The entire point is that you're supposed to run and hide. You don't go attacking the Xenomorph full frontal in Alien Isolation, do you?
Nope.
Then there you go. So yeah, but it is a pretty looking game. Both of them are pretty looking.
That's awesome.
Yep. Anyways, we're going to move on to Gaming Flashback. And the reason why I chose this one is that, A, it hadn't been done before, And two, its 30th anniversary was 3 days ago, which I did not know. So, TJ, do the gaming flashback.
Okay. Street Fighter II, The World Warrior. Street Fighter II, The World Warrior, also simply known as Street Fighter II, is a competitive fighting game developed by Capcom and originally released for arcade systems on February 6, 1991, and then released like 20 more times 10 years after. Street Fighter II improved many of the concepts included in the first game, including the use of special command-based moves, a six-button configuration, while offering players a wider selection of playable characters, each with their own fighting style, and introducing the combo system. Street Fighter II became the best-selling title since the golden age of arcade gaming. By 1994, the game had been played by over 25 million people in the United States alone, at home, and in arcades. Due to its success, a series of updated versions offering additional features and characters were released. All versions of Street Fighter II have sold more than 200,000 arcade cabinets over 15 million software units worldwide, and they are estimated to have grossed over $10 billion in revenue, making it one of the top three highest-grossing video games of all time as of 2017, and the best-selling fighting game up until 2019. The SNES version of Street Fighter II sold over 6.3 million cartridges, making it Capcom's best-selling single software title for the next two decades and their best-selling game on a single platform. Street Fighter II is regarded as one of the greatest video games of all time, and in particular, the most important and influential fighting game ever made. Its launch is seen as a revolutionary moment within its genre, credited with popularizing the fighting genre during the 1990s and inspiring other producers to create their own fighting series. It also sparked a renaissance for arcade video game industry and had an impact on competitive video gaming and wider popular culture such as films and music. The game had many home console ports, including Street Fighter II: The World Warrior for the Super NES, Street Fighter II Champion Super Special Champion Edition for the Mega Drive, Street Fighter II Turbo for the Super NES, Super Street Fighter II the New Challengers for the Super NES, and Street Fighter II for the Game Boy, Super Street Fighter II Turbo Revival for Game Boy Advance, Hyper Street Fighter II the Anniversary for PlayStation 2, Super Street Fighter II Turbo HD Remix for PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, and finally Ultra Street Fighter II for the Nintendo Switch.
I think I played the Super Street Fighter II back in early 90s with my friends and just enjoyed, you know, beating the crap out of each other with that game.
Now, here's the thing. You know, the reason why Street Fighter II is called The World Warrior is because Street Fighter, the first one, I don't know how many. I think it was just Ken and Ryu, wasn't it?
It was just Ryu.
And Ken. They had two guys. And it was all these, you know, the same, like, four or five locations in the U.S., I don't know. And the thing about Street Fighter II was that, no, you had it at an airbase, and you had it at this place, and you had it at that place, and you had Dalsim, and you had all these other weird and wacky characters. And I think it's the weird and wacky characters that really got to people, that got it interested in the first place. And when they realized they all had their own special moves, then people really started getting into Street Fighter II as a science.
Yeah, because, like, you couldn't play as any character besides Ken or Ryu in the first game. People were like, I want to play as those two cool characters. I want to play as, like, Sagat and Birdie and all that jazz. And so when Street Fighter II came out, suddenly you could play as, like, Blanka and E. Honda and Dalsim and all those characters.
Yeah.
All the characters that were regulated to being enemies in the first game were suddenly, like, you could actually fiddle around with and learn who was the coolest and figure out, like, which character's style suits you best.
And if you ever saw, there was quarter upon quarter upon quarter, 500 quarters on the front of that machine, where people would just stack their quarters.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you a question, TJ. How often did you ever say the lines, but for me, it was Tuesday?
I don't say that line because I feel like that game killed Raul Julia.
Of course!
I love the cheesiness of it, but man, I wish that hadn't been Raul Julia's last thing ever.
I agree.
Why? He loved doing it, though.
Yeah.
He did it for his kids.
Let me give you a little asterisk here. I knew Raul Julia. He's a New Yorker. He's Puerto Rican. He loved doing public television because he wanted to give back. And yeah, he loved doing that because it took his mind off other concerns in his life when he was doing that movie. So he was having a ball.
Well, that's good. I'm really happy that, like, yeah, I've heard the stories that he first went into that movie because his kids loved video games and he wanted to go ahead and get in there and be like, that would be cool, wouldn't it, if I was in a video game you loved? And that's a really heartwarming story about that.
Yeah.
And yes, I reckon that movie is full of one-liners that are just good lord.
Yeah. So now let me ask you a question. Was it Street Fighter II that got you into fighting games?
I did love Street Fighter II: The New Challengers. I was a Cammy main for things other than the fact that her butt cheeks are sticking out. I've always liked the speedy character in games, and I liked the speed of her moves.
Vega of the New Challengers and Chun-Li on the original, the first Street Fighter II.
Did you have a main, Jonah?
No, I wasn't much of a Street Fighter guy. I'm not much of a fighting guy, to be honest. I played Street Fighter II in the arcade, but it wasn't like, oh, this is, you know, it's not something that clicked with me. I mean, for me, you know, here's the thing. I guess I was always a Mortal Kombat kind of guy.
That's fair.
But here's the thing. I was never good enough to be able to do any finishing moves in it. I will say this, though. Street Fighter IV for the PC was probably the best fighting game ever for any of the major fighting games. Because of the net coding, because of the graphics, because of all the tweaking. You know, I think if you want to know of a watershed fighting game, it was probably Street Fighter IV for the for PC.
Yeah, and they kind of stretched Street Fighter IV out the same way they did with Street Fighter II, because they knew what they had. They continued to add characters, continued to make versions.
And here's the other thing about Street Fighter II. It was so big, it was so popular, that when Street Fighter III came out, people said, "What? Oh, sorry, I'm busy playing Street Fighter II." It's like Street Fighter III never existed.
Which, it's niche, but it's also a shame, because Street Fighter III, Third Strike, is legitimately considered to be one of the most technically sound fighting games of all time.
Yeah.
It's also gorgeous. Like, some of the the character animations in Street Fighter III's Third Strike are incredible.
Yeah. But unfortunately, it was so overshadowed by Street Fighter II that Street Fighter II, by that time, had become big business in esports, especially in Japan. Would you say Street Fighter II was the first esports game?
That's hard to say as far as fighting games go. If you want to like go way back, it was probably the contest people had with getting the high score in Donkey Kong and Pac-Man.
No, but I mean, in a competitive sports situation, like you see, you know, when you have an arena, two people facing off, people are watching, and you know, in a stadium sort of mode, you know, actual esports, not some Twin Galaxy. Okay, I'm gonna play. I'm not playing against you. I'm playing against the machine. I just want to do better against the machine than you do.
That brings up an interesting point. Have you ever heard of Evo Moment 30? I think it's 32, 37.
Yeah,
Moment 37. That was done on Street Fighter III Third Strike, and that is basically Evo wasn't a huge thing back when Evo Moment 37 happened. It was like a small hall full of fighting game, passionate fighting game fans,
yeah,
that came from around the world to throw down in a quick tournament. And that was when Daigo Umehara and Justin Wong were playing in a match, And there's a parry system in Street Fighter 3 where if you hold forward as your enemy hits you, you'll parry the blow. And Justin Wong did Chun-Li's super on Daigo Umehara to try to finish him off. And Daigo parried the entire super, which is ridiculously hard to do. And especially in a live, high-pressure, like, top-level play match. And he pulled off a combo against him and won the match. And, like, it is largely considered to be, like, the mainstream... The moment that esports went from being, like, a basement scene to being, like, something everybody could understand, everybody could get hyped for. So, like... I want, like, Street Fighter 2 laid the groundwork for that. There's no doubt about it. Street Fighter 2 is the one that brought everybody, like, everybody to the table. Everybody could hear Street Fighter and instantly think, oh, like Street Fighter 2. I love that game. Street Fighter 3 is the one that made esports a phenomenon.
All right. Let me ask you a question. Have you played Ultra Street Fighter 2 for the Switch? I mean, is this a sort of game in which you can, a retro game that you can pop back in and get into?
Ultra Street Fighter 2 is an interesting thing because they redid every single one of the sprites.
Uh-huh.
So many would argue that it's not the original experience because of the way that the sprites are done. I think that the sprites look awesome in that game. They're very clean and the action is very nice. But I can see where people that were, like, I would say purists for the original.
Yeah, let's hold on 1 second. Now, for those who don't understand this, and I'm pretty sure a lot of you already do, Street Fighter 2, they got it down to the pixel. Mm-hmm. They literally have it down to the pixel. And if any move is changed, you'll see reams of information about it saying, oh, they did this and this, and then you have to do this and this, because they have it down to a science. They know when a pixel will touch another pixel in that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, people are huge. Like, Street Fighter 2 also, and all of the additions that came out of it, is where people really started paying attention to what is known as frame data, which is how many frames does a move take to finish or attack or hit or whatever. And so, like, when you have a game like Ultra Street Fighter 2, where every single sprite was redone, it messes with people's perception of the frame data and where it should be, and, like, makes and throws off timing on certain things. So, yeah, like, there are people that love Ultra Street Fighter 2, but there's a reason that you don't see it as widely played as, like, original editions. Like, I would say that Street Fighter 2 Hyper Fighting is probably the most widely played of all of them. Because it's widely considered to be, like, the purest form of Street Fighter 2. But I'm not crazy about it because it also doesn't have the added characters like Cammy and Vega.
Yes, it does. And, what are you talking about? I see a screenshot of Cammy right in front of me. She's fighting Akuma.
And Hyper Fighting?
Well, yeah. You can, well, this is actually now, I guess it's new because it says you can now play as Shin Akuma in Super Street Fighter 2 as he's fighting Cammy. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure DLC has been released for it, so.
Taking a quick look. Yeah, but, no, Hyper Fighting was before they put out characters like Cammy and Fei Long.
Oh, no, I was saying about Ultra Street Fighter 2.
No, I was saying
the Hyper Street Fighter, the anniversary PS2. Oh, okay.
There are so many, like, I get it. There are so many versions of this game, and it's kind of hard to keep all of them in, all the ducks in a row.
Well, here's the thing. I prefer Super Puzzle Fighter to Turbo HD Remix, damn it.
That's also a good game.
Yep. And it came out the same year as the Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo HD Remix. Unfortunately, it's backwards compatible, so I'm still able to enjoy it. I just wish that it's a game I put on almost mute. The screaming in that game just is annoying as hell. Just shut up. Anyways,
Street Fighter 2 was the whole genre as we know it wouldn't be the same if Street Fighter 2 didn't happen.
Yeah, and next week we'll talk about Pac-Man. Here's the thing. The only reason why I did this one is that it's the 30th anniversary. Normally, I don't do a game that's this massive. You know?
Mm-hmm.
That's why there's so little information that I put in the... In this text, because guess what? I don't have to put too much information in it. It's like reviewing sugar.
Yeah.
Sugar is sweet! Next! It has a chemical compound of carbon and hydrogen. Anyway.
Those are indeed things. And, like, it's an apropos thing. Everybody loves sugar. Only a handful of people don't enjoy something sweet in some way.
Hmm. I gotta get some soda in me soon. Anyways, we're gonna move on to game news. Microsoft plans to merge ZeniMax into a new subsidiary called Vault. This coming from PSU. A new document from an online gateway covering European Union law has revealed that Microsoft will acquire Bethesda under a new subsidiary which is being created called Vault, and that the Bethesda's parent company, ZeniMax Media, will be merged into Vault rather than directly through Microsoft. The document, which can be fully viewed online, is a notification prior to the EU allowing ZeniMax and Microsoft merger and states that Microsoft will have, quote-unquote, sole control of the whole of ZeniMax. The concentration of these two companies will take place through a merger pursuant to which the newly created Microsoft subsidiary, Vault, will be merged to and into ZeniMax. In short, this means that Bethesda and ZeniMax will legally be classified under new company known as Vault, rather than being directly connected to Microsoft. This is similar to how Take-Two Interactive operates the publishing efforts of Private Division, which are a subsidiary of the publisher. Vault will still be fully controlled by Microsoft, as it will be a wholly owned subsidiary, and puts the future of Bethesda releases on the PS5 still largely up in the air. Microsoft could still easily just publish these Bethesda games on PC and Xbox platforms, integrating ZeniMax into the Xbox Games Studios lineup. But they could also just easily release them on other platforms, such as PS5, Nintendo Switch, and Google Stadia, due to the company acting as a middleman between Microsoft and Bethesda, not fully integrating with Microsoft, and acting as a wall of separation between the two, which is basically what you have with Mojang. Yeah, the entire reason that they're doing this is because Microsoft wants this deal to go through, and they do not want to have to deal with antitrust.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird name that they picked, though. The Vault.
Is it? What is Bethesda best known for right now?
I wouldn't want them to be just a one game.
Well, they would. You know. I mean, Elder Scrolls 6 is still. Here's the thing. Vault not only refers to Fallout, but refers to. Here's a vault of games. We have this vault of games for you.
Hmm.
I guess it felt a bit on the nose kind of thing. And
well,
why couldn't they. I guess. I don't know.
Why not be on the nose? Maybe they should just call them Private Division, like Take-Two Interactive did. You went on the nose. Hi,
yeah.
Our coffee shop is called Coffee.
Does this encompass? Is this just ZeniMax and Bethesda's brands, or is this
it's all of ZeniMax's brands?
Arcane
mean,
and ID,
yeah,
and all that.
Yeah,
does.
All of them. Hmm? All of them. Yeah.
So Obsidian and In Exile.
Here's what it means is that when you play, if you play, say, Elder Scrolls 6 on the PlayStation 5, you won't see Microsoft's name on it. You'll see the publisher's Vault, and it's being developed by Bethesda. Microsoft owns it, but it's being published by Vault.
That's a very, very, very weird loophole that it looks like Microsoft and ZeniMax are going through to make this not look like a monopoly.
Well, here's the thing. Scott, when you play Minecraft, do you see Microsoft's name anywhere in the opening credits?
No, it's Mojang.
Yeah, that's basically what. It's not that weird. So, I mean, unlike PlayStation is going to have their plastered on MLB The Show, PlayStation Studio, Microsoft has been very circumspect because if you play, say, Cuphead on the PS PlayStation is Studio MDHR. Oh, no. Whatever. They have a four-letter acronym. MHDR, I think it is. Something like that. It doesn't really say Microsoft Xbox Game Studios. So not... like I said, Microsoft's been sued for antitrust stuff back when they were with Explorer. So you can bet that they're doing everything they can not to seem like they're what's it called? Like they need to have antitrust sicked on them. Although it'd be very interesting. What if Microsoft's declared a monopoly? That would be weird. But it won't be, because you have Apple, you have Google, you have whatever it is that Amazon is doing. So they're large, but they're not a monopoly. They do have competitors.
Yeah, like, I guess you got to do what you got to do to make this happen, right? Because the last thing that Microsoft would want after trying to fork over that much money to make this happen would be to would be to be cut off by antitrust laws right at the finish line.
You know what Microsoft wants to say? Game Pass, day one, The Elder Scrolls 6. How many people do you think would be just forking over that $15 a month? Right there and then there. Even if they only intended to do it, say, for like 3 months, because that would be $45, which is basically how much you're going to buy the Elder Scrolls 6 for, right? I think people would think it's well worth it, just for that one game.
60 when that comes out, or if not 80.
But I'm just saying, you know, 3 month subscription for $1, sure.
Yeah. A Game Pass would be cheaper, I guess. So.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense.
And they say, oh, by the way, Fallout New Vegas 2.
I guess they're still looking to buy a Japanese studio, which may or may not be Sega.
Yeah. Now, that would be trickier. Because the one thing that Microsoft won't do is say, oh, yeah, they're going to be part of the Vault too. No. If Microsoft acquired Sega, Sega's going to remain called Sega, because they want the Sega brand.
Right.
I mean, it's...
Yeah, that would be the point of getting that, is to have their name.
Yeah. And there is no way that Sonic's not going to keep appearing in Nintendo stuff. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, hey, look, you have Microsoft people in Smash Brothers now. You have Cuphead, and you have one of the Minecraft characters. Oh, wait, can you fight as an Enderman?
Oh, yeah, in Smash Brothers,
what's the green exploding plant guy?
Enderman is one of the skins for Steve in Minecraft.
Yeah, I know they also have the green exploding guy, too.
Super Smash Bros. As his character.
Yeah.
They also have that...
Alex, and then Enderman, I know the zombie was one.
Mm-hmm. Those are the four.
And they had to completely rewrite the game to allow them to do Minecraft-y stuff in the game.
That's crazy.
Every single stage. Can you imagine? There's a stage in Smash Brothers. First off, there's like 100 stages in Smash Brothers. And second off, there's a stage called The Great Escape, and it's massive. Can you imagine having to go through 99 levels and then also having to go through the stupid Great Escape map and rework every single texture? And that giant, enormous monstrosity. You should Google The Great Escape and see how stupidly large that map is. Because if I was working at Nintendo or Bandai Namco or whoever's working on the levels, and I had to go through and that was my assigned project for the day, I'd probably break down crying.
Microsoft probably waved a bunch of money in Nintendo's face because it's cross promotion. Now Microsoft knows that. Super Smash Brothers is big. Hell yeah, they want Cuphead in there, they want other guys in there. Hell, you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if sometime between now and 2022 they announce that Master Chief is going to be in Super Smash Brothers. I wonder what the reaction to that would be.
That'd be insane. I'm sure heads would explode.
Well, you already have Master Chief in coming to Fortnite.
I'm sorry, it's not The Great Escape, it's called The Great Cave Offensive.
Okay. But, I mean, look at the attention that Red and Blue and Master Chief being in Fortnite made people go, what? Yeah, so, like I said, oh, by the way, TJ, were you covering the entire controversy about that Fallout New Vegas mod?
Which one?
The one that they had to pull because it had pedophilic stuff in it.
Oh, no, I hadn't heard of this.
Oh, God. Yeah, they had to pull it because it was teetering on, and going over the edge of having the character having a sexy underage girl in it.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah. And that reminds me, one of the news items that we're hitting today is yet another sexual harassment case against the CEO of Riot Games, and I decided not to cover it because I don't care. We know what a shit show Riot Games is, and it continues to be a shit show. And all these press releases they released about it, it's bullshit. They don't mean a word of it.
We're not covering the CD Projekt Red getting hacked either.
Nah, not really. It's not like people. It's not as serious as other stuff. I mean, you know.
It's worth noting this is the second time that's happened to CD Projekt Red, specifically relating to Cyberpunk. They also got hacked in 2017, and the hackers also tried to ransom so whatever they took from it.
Yeah. But there is some moving and shaking going on with the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Okay. Electronic Arts to decide the fate of Anthem, from Forbes. Electronic Arts Incorporated will hold a meeting this week to determine whether it will continue to create a new version of the failed online game Anthem, according to three people familiar with the matter. Anthem, a multiplayer game by the EA-owned developer BioWare, launched in February 2019 to poor reviews. In the following months, BioWare put together a small team to overhaul the game. Executive producer Christian Daly wrote three blog posts last year outlining some of the big changes planned, but in December, Daly left the Anthem team as part of a BioWare management shakeup, leaving the project's fate in question. Daly actually, some added context, Daly moved over to Dragon Age because the executive producer of Dragon Age left the company.
But was it Mike Darrow?
Yes.
Okay.
So, this week, EA executives will review the latest version of Anthem next and decide whether to expand the team or abandon the project. So the people who asked not to be named during a private named discussing private information. The Anthem Next team includes about 30 people, BioWare said last year. People familiar with the project said it will need to expand to at least triple that in order to produce new content and continue attempting to overhaul the game. Anthem Next includes major changes to the game's core systems and user interface, the people said. It's not clear if or when these changes will be implemented in the version that's currently available to players. I'm going to go ahead and say it. There's actually, like, I can't see any chance of EA being like, yeah, let's keep doing more Anthem.
The article also brought up other people who actually stuck with it, with their games, like Destiny and No Man's Sky. But here's the problem with Anthem. I played it and I nearly fell asleep.
It's boring. Which is like the worst thing you can have in a looter shooter.
Here's the other problem. Why the fuck would you have BioWare doing this kind of game? This is not what they do. This is not what they do. What, you know, EA said, look, there's Destiny. BioWare, we want you to do Destiny. But we do role-playing games. No, we want you to do Destiny.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a bit... Here's the thing. Anthem started off with something completely different from what I understand. You know, not completely different, but a lot different from what ended up. And basically, Anthem is just a lot of popular things just smushed together. You know, looter shooters are hot right now. Let's make it a looter shooter and let's include this feature because it's sort of like Fallout 4, including all that town shit because people liked crafting in Minecraft. I didn't want to make it. I didn't give a shit about making towns in Fallout 4. That's not what I played Fallout 4 for.
That was pretty much the only thing I enjoyed in Fallout 4 was town ship building. I just wish that it had more.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You already have Minecraft.
It wasn't supposed to be Minecraft. It was supposed to be its own thing.
No, it was Minecraft. It was BioWare said, you know, people really like this Minecraft thing. Let's see if we can incorporate, Bethesda. It just distracted me from stuff that I wanted to do. I didn't give a shit about the towns. Fuck the towns. That's why no one liked, what's-his-face, the Minutemen, because they always wanted you to, hey, you know what, help our town.
Go make another town that you will then have to look after there, too.
And the thing is, I actually won with the Minutemen, with Sterling Garvey. I think that was his name. What was his name again? The guy with the cowboy hat.
It wasn't Sterling, it was something else.
Preston Garvey.
Yeah,
Preston Garvey. And I won with the Minutemen, but only because ideologically I liked their thing best, you know. Otherwise, I couldn't give a shit about those towns. I really didn't.
I spent very little time. I don't doubt that there are people that enjoyed it because there was a full system there, but it wasn't really why I play Fallout.
I mean, if you're gonna do it like Grounded. Grounded knows what it is.
But back to BioWare, like, why on earth would you continue Anthem at this point? You have Dragon Age 4.
And by the way, Dragon Age wasn't even commissioned by EA. They did that shit on their own and said, hey, EA, look at this.
Not only do they have that, they have Mass Effect Legendary Edition literally right around the corner.
Yeah, actually, you know what? That was a news item that I was planning earlier in the week, but other things overshadowed it. They're making some changes in it that are very interesting. The only change I really want is the ability to not have to activate the Reaper enemy identification thing until I want to. Because I like having Legion commenting about stuff, but if I want everybody to survive, he has to be the very last person I recruit. And it doesn't really give me time to talk to him. Because one of the things he talks about, if you talk to him long enough, which is impossible if you want to have everybody surprised, is that he tells you everything about Sovereign from the first game. His name is Nazara. He actually has a hive mind. And he talks about how one connected with two and all that stuff. And that's lost if you want to have everybody survive.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting because they're also not launching with multiplayer in there.
Yeah.
Well,
here's the thing about 3.
Hold on.
Okay.
I think it's something that, like, that kind of sucks that they're not launching with the multiplayer because that actually affected things in Mass Effect 3.
Well, that was what I was about to say is how is it going to affect it now? Because I didn't have to do it. You know, you don't have to do multiplayer. It'll remain 50% the entire game, but if you do all of the things, you'll still have an EMS high enough that you won't have to worry about, having a bad ending.
Mm-hmm. I think that's also something that, like, you focus on putting out the trilogy as like a complete single player experience, and then maybe you add the multiplayer later in DLC.
You know what I'd like to see is that those missions are with bots that you can do, you know, just offhand to increase. Maybe I doubt it, but it would be nice to be able to do it with bots, so you don't have to play with other players. But yeah, I mean, I'm really looking forward to it. I am torn about getting it for PC or getting it for Xbox. Again, easier to stream on PC for me. But then again, there's a lot of achievements that I might want to get again.
Yeah, this will be fun. I'm really, especially with all the changes they've made to Mass Effect 1, like in terms of just like Mass Effect 1, its visuals have aged like milk. The models look like robotic.
I didn't mind that. It's the combat that everybody hates.
The combat, yes, is very
clunky.
I would say lackluster and has no impact whatsoever.
Well, but let's have them do Anthem.
And the fact that they're like redoing some of the combat elements in Mass Effect 1 and redoing the Mako controls and adding so much detail to the entire game. like, the way they spun it to me when I was checking it out in a preview event was that it's going to feel like playing Mass Effect 1 for the first time all over again, which actually has me interested to try Mass Effect 1 again. Because usually that's like, that game feels like a drag to me.
I still play it. I still play Mass Effect 1. For one thing, the story is really good.
I think the story's really good, too. It just feels like a chore in a lot of areas. I really enjoy the story of Mass Effect 1. I just don't like some of the mechanics.
Did they say anything about changing the Mako missions?
They're redoing the Mako's controls, and they're reworking the visuals of all of the planets.
Okay. Because here's the thing. Playing it, you knew, it's just a palette swap on almost all of them. Sometimes the skybox would be different. You know, there's one planet I really like in which they're so close to the planet, like, fills the entire screen. And it's just, like, awe-inspiring. And everybody likes going on the moon. The moon was neat, even though it was almost monochromatic, which the moon is. But you see Earth in the background, you know, which is where you first meet Edie, although you don't even know it's Edie. It's the Hannibal AI. That's where, now we know in Mass Effect 1, that's where Edie was born. I wonder how many people who are listening to this know who Edie is.
Yeah, that's...
So, Scott, did you ever play Mass Effect?
No, I have not.
Well, you know... Yeah, here's the thing. I think Mass Effect Legendary Edition may be the best way for you to play it. Because you don't have to deal with the shit that people had to deal with in Mass Effect 1, which might color your view of it. And here's the thing about Mass Effect, Scott. Mass Effect practically revolutionized the old save game sort of thing. Because, yeah, this is not The Walking Dead. When you make decisions, and it's in the save file, they will have ramifications. Even the tiniest little thing. Even the tiniest little change you think would not have an effect in... Nope, it has an effect in the later games, big or small.
That's good.
So...
Do you do multiple saves or just one save?
Oh, multiple saves, definitely. I mean...
Okay.
Like, I have one Shepard who romances no one in Mass Effect 1 or 2, so that he can have a fresh romance with Caden in number 3. Male Caden, that is. What's it called? Because in 3, they actually finally allowed male Shepard to hook up with male Caden. then I have one in which he dates Liara through the entire trilogy. Liara is definitely a creator's pet. The BioWare loves Liara because she is involved in every single one, every single DLC. And just fun watching all the romances. I know people love doing female Shepard and having a relationship with Thane because that is such a tragic romance. Let me ask you a question. TJ, who's your main? Is it a male Shepard or a female Shepard?
I went back and forth between both.
Okay. What was your favorite romance?
Garrett.
Garrus?
Garrus, okay. By far. I love Garrus. I love Garrus so much that, Garrus is my favorite character in that entire game.
Really?
Like his arc so much. He goes from being a nerdy little Boy Scout, maid on the
system. That's not. He wanted to be a cowboy cop.
He goes from being basically a meter maid on the Citadel to being he wants to emulate Shepard so badly that he goes out of his way to, like, become a leader like Shepard.
My favorite character in this trilogy is Rex.
Rex is very good, too. There's no wrong answers as to, like, what your favorite character is in Mass Effect.
I know. People really love romancing Thane, and they really love romancing Tali.
Mm-hmm. Tali's great, too. I romance Tali as a male Shepard. I really like...
She is very... I can't believe a guy like you would notice a girl like me sort of kind of person. She's very she's very shy and nervous and say, oh my god, you're into me? Really? I can't believe it. And if you have sex with her, what's it called? Here's the thing about Quarians, Scott. They have very bad, they don't have very good immune systems, and they have to wear suits so that they don't get sick. But in order to have sex with Shepard, she has to leave her suit. And she talks about afterward how she's running a fever, and she had a bad cold for a week, but it was totally worth it. And only Shepard knows what her face is like if she's romanced. And you don't get to see it, but he knows what she looks like. As for Thane, Thane is dying. He has a terminal illness. So when you have a romance with him, it's a romance with a dying man. And he dies midway through three, no matter what you do. You can't avoid it. And then you have to hold his funeral. And at the end of the funeral, when everybody's gathering around, this isn't the Citadel DLC, when everybody's gathering around getting ready to get back on the ship, Thane's ghost comes and talks to a female Shepard, which is really touching. There's also a touching scene in which he was trying to send you video messages, but they kept getting intercepted, and she finally watches them, and he's talking about I don't think I'm able to get through to you, but this is what's going on to me, which is also very sad. We romance them or not, you know. So yeah, I strongly suggest getting Mass Effect Legendary Edition, Scott, because it'll be updated so that a lot of the things that people complained about will definitely be gone, but you'll still have the same humongously strong narrative focus.
Yeah. It's, and of course, with all of this, they're doing things like, the new edition reduces the load times, like, it streamlines some of the long waits that you would have before. It's, there's a lot here.
Yeah. Anyways, let's move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Terraria creator cancels Stadia port after being locked out of Google account. This is from PC Gamer. Terraria co-creator Andrew Spinks has announced that the game will no longer be coming to Google Stadia after his Google account was disabled. The entire ordeal has been going on for around 3 weeks when Spinks Studio, Relogic, had its YouTube channel taken down for currently unexplained reasons. In a thread between Terraria Twitter account and Team YouTube, the Terraria team explained that they had received an email regarding an alleged TOS violation despite having posted no new content in several months. The email was assumed to have been received in error, but days later the account was disabled. It appears that Spink's personal email is the one assigned to Relogic YouTube channel, with Dev taking to Twitter to announce that his Google account is still disabled, losing access to thousands of dollars of apps on Google Play, as well as his Google Drive and Gmail address. My account has been now disabled for over 3 weeks. I still have no idea why. After using every resource I have to get this resolved, you have done nothing but give me the runaround, Spinks tweeted at Google. He then went on one step further, announcing that Terraria would no longer be coming to Google Stadia as a result of the situation, saying, "I can take this no other way than you deciding to burn this bridge. Consider it burned. Terraria, hashtag Terraria for Google Stadia is canceled. I will not be involved with a corporation that values their customers and partners so little. Doing business with you is a liability."
Literally.
It's a bold move, and one that will probably stir Google into taking some action to try and repair relations. After all, Terraria has sold over 30 million copies of the game as of April 2020. That's a big game to lose after Google only recently announced they would be closing Stadia's internal development studios in order to focus on deepening their business partnerships. That is really strange, and I know I had an issue with my YouTube account getting hacked, and I was.
All you have to do is make a copyright claim.
Well, it wasn't copyright claim.
I know, I'm just saying, but all you have to do is claim that there's a copyright, you know.
Oh, yeah.
They'll close your channel without even having due process. Because
there's no due process at all. None.
Here's the thing. Google, last I saw, and this was a few years ago, has $48 billion in revenue. And by that, I mean after taxes. And they can't hire people for $50,000 a year to curate copyright claims. I don't care if they hire 1,000 people at 50K a year. That's 5 million a year. That's a drop in the fucking bucket to pay. You know? But you cannot contact Google. There is absolutely no transparency there. There is absolutely no customer support. Nothing. And you know how big Google could be if they didn't have absolutely stupid people? And by stupid, I mean people who don't understand what business is. Because right now, as we speak, there are 3 antitrust suits against Google right now. And there's a good chance in Europe they're going to lose.
Yeah. It's been really shaky for Google recently. Like, obviously it's a multi-million dollar company. It's a
multi-billion dollar.
And they're not in danger of going away anytime soon. But like,
oh, they are. If they have any trust slapped on them and considered monopoly, you'll see them go the way of Ma Bell.
Yeah, this stuff, like this, the recent stuff going on with Google just reeks of
incompetence.
It reeks of incompetence. It reeks of a system so big that the people in charge just leave large swaths of it to automation.
Yep.
Here's the thing: Google Stadia should be a slam dunk. Only Google can do what Google Stadia is attempting, and they're failing at it.
Yeah, the commercials are like bizarre for Google
Stadia. Okay, think of commercials. I mean, content. The content is shit. I mean, let's compare it with xCloud right now. Microsoft has all their first-party games on it. They have EA on it. They're in negotiations with Ubisoft to have their games on it. Because if you're going to do a fucking streaming service, you need content. You have to give people a reason to give you $15 a month. But they're doing nothing about it. And their hands-off stuff is getting them in trouble because, you know, whenever you post a video, you now have to say, this is for children, this is not for children. This is what happens when you automate. You don't have people with common sense looking at videos and saying, yeah, that's for children, that's not for children.
You know, you would think that with all the times that Steam has fucked up over the years, that a company like Google that has the money to overcome these things would take a look at, like, the issues that Steam has had and say, let's not leave important things to automation.
No, but you don't want to spend the money.
Yep.
For some
of
reason.
Of course they don't. They want to pocket it.
Yep. For $48 billion, we need 100 new yachts. It's not like spending $10 million for 2,000 people to curate would affect your bottom line. Not to mention it would get a lot of people jobs. You know, I mean, that would be a pretty sweet job if my entire job was 8 hours a day looking at copyright strikes. that would be a dream job for me. I do my I'm done with that. Okay, let me play some games now. But yeah, I mean,
you play games while doing that.
It's sad that the only way to get any attention is to be a large enough developer who can complain in public about you. Because if it was me having this problem, guess what? You're shit out of luck.
I did have this problem, and I am shit out of luck.
Yeah.
At least with my old YouTube channel, anyways.
I mean, yeah.
It's just, yeah, there was no talking to a person. You know, it was nothing I could do. And it's even sadder that, you know, he has all these resources and he couldn't even get it back, and they don't even, you know, like, respond to him quickly, like, oh, or...
Man, they didn't respond to him quickly. They did nothing.
Yeah, they did nothing.
There was nothing. That's why he had to go to Twitter and say, you're doing nothing. I don't know. Is Phil Spencer working there?
No, I thought he was Xbox.
Oh, no, Phil Harrison. Wait, who is...
Phil Harrison is the guy that... I do believe that Phil Harrison was the guy that was running Google Stadia.
Yeah, Phil Harrison's no longer there, so...
just an AI bot now.
Yeah. Google is actually run by an AI bot.
Yep.
I will say this, you know, they do have that AI drawing recognition thing, which is pretty fun. Did you ever do it? In which, I forgot the name of it. It'll say, draw a sailboat. And the AI isn't told what you're drawing. So you make the drawing, and you'll see it thinking, and say, oh, that's a sailboat. And the thing is, it has millions of pictures sent to it. So it's learning how different people draw different things. Because if I say draw a cat, you're going to draw a cat differently. You're going to draw a cat differently. I'm going to draw a cat differently. But it's going to identify, oh, that's a cat, just by the way you drew it. Yeah, it's Google Quick Draw. So just go to quickdraw.withgoogle.com. It's really fun. But anyways, there's too much reliance on automation. And, you know, if I were to pass a law, I would say no final decisions may be done by a computer. It has to be done by a human. You can have automation detecting things, but you cannot have it making decisions. Period. End of story. It's like War Games. Didn't anybody ever watch the movie War Games?
Yes, we watched it.
you can't have Joshua running amok.
Let's play a game.
Let's play Global Thermonuclear War.
What? Why don't we play tic-tac-toe instead?
No, he says, strange game. The only winning move is not to play. How about a nice game of chess? Anyways, speaking of things that are fucked up, MP Bill takes aim at PlayStation 5 price scalping, and this comes to us from Eurogamer. Following the creation of an early day motion to discuss console scalping in the UK, it seems MPs are now beginning to draft legislation to tackle the issue, although you shouldn't get your hopes up for anything to become law in the near future. Named the Gaming Hardware Automated Purchase and Resale Bill 2019-21, the bill is introduced into the House of Commons by Scottish National Party MP Douglas Chapman, who hopes to tackle console scalping in a similar manner to ticket touting. Now, for those who don't know, in Europe, it is illegal to electronically scalp concert tickets. So what they're doing is they're trying to get a law that's similar to that. The bill is what's known as a private member's bill, meaning the MP introducing it is not a cabinet member, and as it's such, it stands a lower chance of passing than government-backed public bills. Still, private member's bills can help draw attention to an issue and lead to legislation more indirectly. The scalping of both consoles and graphic cards have hit the headlines over the past few months, and with console shortages set to continue long into 2021, the issue shows no sign of slowing down. At the end of the last month, Argos found a group of scalpers had managed to scoop up its PlayStation 5 dock before even placed on sale, while Game played down a scalping group's claim that it picked up 2,000 PS5 consoles in one day. So, there's supposed to be a new shipment of Xbox Series X's coming to GameStop, but I'm not even going to bother. If I'm going to get a console, I want to be able to walk into a store and just buy it.
I mean, they need to do something like this, though. Like, this is a ridiculous problem to the point where, like,
this is ridiculous in that it shouldn't happen at all.
Mm-hmm. And, like, it's not as simple as just making better CAPTCHA software, but it also, like, there's definitely an issue with the fact that, like, the retail outlets that are selling these PS5s don't actually give a shit if people buy a whole bunch of PS5s. They're happy that they're selling the PS5s. And that's kind of part of the problem, is that, like, they're not doing anything in their power to dissuade people that would set up a bot to do these automated purchases and buy these things en masse. Instead, they're just kind of like saying, okay, we'll take the sales then. And I've seen, like, people are starting to report their quarterly earnings. And of course, Sony took a victory lap with how many PS5s they sold. Just like,
yeah, but they didn't take a victory lap on how many peripherals or games they sold. Yeah, that's the problem.
There was an article where they were saying their software sales were hurting. They weren't selling as much software because I guess the systems weren't being activated and you know, accounts being put on it. Just like sitting there because they haven't been sold to actual people. They're just sitting in some scalpers, I guess.
Well, these companies, too. Here's the thing about selling a console. Brick-and-mortar sellers and online sellers sell them almost at cost. There's very little margin of profit for selling the a console. The real sales come with peripherals and software, and they're not going to be selling peripherals, and they're not going to be selling software, especially Sony, because they have this thing, well, you can't use the PS5 controller with the PlayStation 4 because we said so. There's no reason it shouldn't, because they're both Bluetooth, but yeah, we just only PS5 controls with PS5s and nothing else, and get off our backs. By the way, Microsoft allows you to play the Xbox Series X controllers with your old consoles and whatever, you know, it's like, they don't care. They treat it like a PC. You know, PCs don't worry about that. But the other thing that we found out is that the PlayStation 5s are also selling at a loss. Big time.
Yeah. It was the same thing. Like, Xbox announced that they're selling their consoles at a loss, too. But they also have, like, the infrastructure of so much...
They also have Xbox Game Pass.
Like, yeah, a lot of services to cover that.
And it's not unusual. I mean, new consoles are loss leaders, right? But usually those are defrayed by games and peripherals. And when people aren't buying games and they're not buying peripherals, you're going to get hit.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't believe that Microsoft sold more launch consoles with the Xbox Series X and the Series S than any other time in history. I cannot believe that. I have to think the Xbox 360 sold more at launch. I really do. I find it hard to believe that it beat the 360. Or that, by the way, the PS5 beat out the PS2. Although, maybe... See, the thing with the PS2 is that it was a steady seller. It has, like, a graph going up, you know? Like, it was really, really new, but then people really started buying it. And the reason why it sold so many is that it just kept on, you know... It was still being sold, like, what? 5 years into the life of the PS3? Something like that? Because you could buy a PS2 for, like, $99?
Yeah.
Anyways, I hope to see something similar happening in the United States, because
they have to do something. Like, it's a problem that's not going away if people just people have already taken so much advantage of the system. They're not gonna just stop
until, you know. Here's the thing about those scalpers is that they have a lot of shit stock that's being unsold too. Because people know, well, this isn't like limited shoes, you know. It's not like Microsoft's going to say, okay, we're not making any Xbox Series X's after 2021. That's it. No more. No, they're going to keep making them. You know, at some point, they're going to be in stores. En masse. It's just people have to be patient.
The only way to stop the scalpers is to not buy their shit. Seriously, because I was like, why would you want to buy double the console? It'll be, they buy it for like, what, $700 and then sell it for like $2,000, and it's like...
You see the story of where one person bought a PS5 from a scalper and found it was bricked because it was a stolen PS5.
That one too. But someone, I think, actually literally got a brick. Like a literal brick.
Oh, I know, I'm talking about that, but I'm telling you, they had a PS5. But since it was reported stolen, Sony just turned it off and bricked it from afar, and he can't use it. It's a $500 paperweight.
I saw the little chat there. He's like, "Can you help me?" He's like, "Nope, can't help you."
This is what you get. Yep. This is what you get for buying from a scalper.
Just don't buy from the scalpers, and then they won't continue this practice because it's not profitable for them.
And it's not like you could prove that he didn't steal it himself.
Exactly. They don't know that. That's why they can't help them. It's like, no. You just don't buy from the scalpers.
Yep. I should have the music, and learning is half the battle.
Yeah.
From what was it from G.I. Joe? What was their thing? G.I. Joe.
I remember that, but I was doing the NPC Now You Know
thing.
They also did stuff like that. You know, they would do like a PSA, and they'd be like, "And now you know," and there'd be a little star going across the screen with a rainbow.
Yeah. Speaking of which, how is your PS5 there, TJ?
It's doing fine. Like, I've been playing on it a lot for games like Dead by Daylight and Destruction All Stars.
Hold on. Did you finish up Demon's Souls?
I did, several times. I played through three characters in that game.
Wow, so all your complaints about Demon's Souls, it's sort of, yeah, but it's Dark Souls.
It's still a good adventure game, and it looks gorgeous, and I want to, like, play different play styles in it. Like, for one character, for my first character, I just played through the game, like, based on what I thought I would like the most. For my second character, I went, like, full-on priest and pole arms, like, healing spells and spears. That was, like, the whole style I went for. And there is, like, enough in the game to warrant exploration like that.
Hmm.
Like, finding the best weapon for a polearm user is actually very difficult in Dark Souls, or in Demon Souls, and you actually have to do a lot of silly things to make it work. So,
can you be deprived in Demon Souls?
How do you mean?
I know in Dark Souls there's one class called Deprived, in which you don't get anything.
There is one like that in Demon's Souls, and I forget what the name of it is, but you basically start out with a loincloth and a dagger.
Yeah, that's basically what the Deprived is in Dark Souls. For that extra challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us some iTunes comments. You can find me at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
Sorry. You want to start that over again?
Sure.
You can find me at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Charter Moore.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.
And, you know, I really hope they show some gameplay video from MLB The Show this time. I mean, it's nice having videos, but I want to see actual gameplay.
Yeah, I agree. I hope they show it off soon, too. It's coming up right around the corner, so they pretty much have to at some point.
You know, I have this old Twitter post in which someone asked Sony San Diego, "Are you ever going to make it for Xbox?" "Say, nope, we're a Sony company." You can imagine that tweet had some ironic replies in the last year. Well, guess what? Anyways, we'll see you next week.